coming to you from a land where it's a little after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I stepped into the next room, and there was Yeti lying in the Philippine sunshine on a little rug. And I thought, boy, there's something I had to do. So I snapped a photograph of him very quickly and just put it up on the website. So there's Yeti lying in the Manila sunshine as it's dark across all the states. Good evening, everybody. Good morning. Whitley Strieber is my guest. We're talking about, and we've had a pretty deep discussion about the visitors. We're about to open the phone line, so if you have questions, now would be the moment. I have obviously dominated a lot of Whitley's time. So, Whitley, if you're ready, there's about a zillion people who would like to speak with you on the lines awaiting.
Well, I'm ready.
Okay, then. Here they come. Wildcard line, you are on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hi, Art and Whitley. My name is George. I'm from Ohio. And I've been an abductee all my life. That happened to me first when I was 5 years old in 1951. Again, when I was 21 years old in 1967, after I'd just returned from Vietnam and was at a duty station in California, and that experience I remember totally and did get help with regression on the examination part. I got to say that I was scared to death when I realized where I was and this person stepped into the light and I saw him. I couldn't talk, but I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to die. And immediately this being in my head said, you're not going to die. You're going to be just fine. We're going to do a few things, and we're going to put you back where we found you. And my fear was completely gone, and it was like it was old home week. But what I wanted to stress was I had a very spiritual experience during this abduction. And I do have some knowledge of the subject since I'm involved, and I'm here to help if you need it, and I can email you.
Well, sure. You can. It's simple to email me. You can email me at whitley@unknowncountry.com. Let me ask you.
He's gone.
Okay.
But he said what he said was he said he had a spiritual experience. So again,
yeah, well,
it's
I know
kind
exactly
of like...
what he was talking about because many people when they are in a close encounter situation, if their fear, they overcome their fear, as he did, he reports having done, then it changes, the whole experience changes, including the way the Greys act. It all changes. I've had that, to an extent, I've had that experience.
The very same thing, Whitley, is reported with people who have had out-of-body experiences. The ones who have close to out-of-body experiences have a tremendous amount of fear. They're frozen. They're scared to death. If they somehow can get past that initial frozen fear, they seem to have a good experience. I've never managed to make it past, well, except
well,
once.
I had one really cool out-of-the-body experience that it got me to go to, I went to one of Bob Monroe's Gateway weekends at his foundation at that time, right after this experience, because it was a perfect split, and I moved out into the room. I was still in this level of reality. I was completely separate from my body. I could see myself and my wife there in the bed, and I moved out through the wall and the window into the front yard. It was magnificent.
Hmm.
Just marvelous. It was
yeah, but again, you got past the fear, and that seems to be the key with any of these sorts of experiences is to get past the fear. And boy, if you're confronted with a gray or an alien, I just don't know how you do that, but I guess he did. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Hi there, and Whitley, I'm so glad to be talking with you. I have wanted to talk with you since 1982. I am blind, and I am a UFO abductee whom has been consciously aware of my experiences with a variety of beings since 1976.
Wow.
Yes, and I have been given permission. I have been waiting for this, to tell you this, since I first learned of you. Up until just a few months ago, any time that I would record audio tapes or put together print presentations, either various ones would interfere with them getting to you, or they would induce fear within sighted people and they would mess with the material. All of that interference has now been rescinded, and I am going to be allowed to share materials with you that have been there for you for so many years.
Well, what can you share with us now?
I'd be glad to. Very much a mixed blessing. Oh, boy, has it ever. From everything from saving my life against me being struck by lightning, which happened just last Friday, to me meeting my soulmate. Then you go to the other extreme where these negative ones tried to trick me to be involved with this woman who is a very negative shaman and who puts false thoughts in people's heads via remote influencing. So I could run the gamut, shall we say, from one extreme to the other.
Okay. Caller, what makes you certain that all of this is some sort of external influence and that it's just not your life sort of rolling along with the good and the bad?
Right. Well, first of all, let me explain to you something. I've gone through the missing time and ended up in places where it's 2 hours later and I'm dropped off in a completely different area. I am a hypnotist for over 36 years. One time they took me up in a craft where they adapted an exercise that hypnotists know where they put the hands on the back and they take a person through a circular motion. They adapted the beams so that I and a friend went up in a craft. Another time I was with this sighted girlfriend and we both woke up and found a large puncture wound on our foreheads with a big knot, and she looked at it and looked at me and looked at her and said, "Dan," we both felt them. They had tried to induce partial or amnesia when they brought us back. I've had markings on my body, just lots of different things.
Okay.
What about your
sight? Well, I'm curious, Whitley, how in the world, when you hear stories like this, do you discern, no disrespect to the last caller, but how do you discern between people telling stories and imaginations and the real thing? I suppose since you've been there and done that, you probably can discern, can't you?
Well, I can, to be honest with you. And it's true that people who really are in the experience generally always can. But at the same time, it's not appropriate for me to say, well, to pass judgment on people because maybe I'd be wrong. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think I can. I wouldn't presume to do that because the dialoguing that's necessary, part of it has to do with letting all of that stuff come out. And over time, what is real will gradually be what is left over time, just the same way as panning for gold. If you keep panning, eventually all you've got left in your pan is the gold.
Yeah, that's right. All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hey, Whitley. This is Jake. I'm calling from Boulder, Colorado. It's really awesome to talk to you guys. I don't know much about your book. I haven't read it. But I had a question. Have you come throughout your studies and writing the involvement with the Greys and mind control? Because I've had many experiences where, and like you said, it comes with articulating and getting out what really happened. But have you found a lot of people that were involved with mind control and the Greys and other entities?
Well, it's a huge subject, and it's a big subject in my life. And the reason that's true is that In May of 1993, I had an object put in my left ear. I was awake when it happened. I saw the people who did it. There may have been a gray there, but there were certainly two human beings there. It happened on a May night. I woke up, and as I awoke, I heard a male voice say in the backyard, the windows were all open, it was a warm night, in the backyard say, condition red. I then saw a man and a woman standing in the doorway at the foot of the bed. They came quickly across the room. I then could not see anymore. I felt myself being turned on my right side and pressure being applied against my left ear, waves of pressure, and a female voice saying, I don't really remember what they were, but they're sort of comforting things to me, like the effect that this was going to be a wonderful blessing and that I shouldn't be afraid and things like that. Mm-hmm.
For the sake of the audience, I remember having Dr. Lear on and describing a surgeon attempting to remove that from your ear, and the surgeon said the damn thing moved. I'll never forget that, Whitley.
Right. The surgeon was on with you.
That's right.
And he described, and that the video is up in the subscriber section of my website to this day, where he actually sees the object move out when he touches it with his scalpel.
That's right.
But let's get back to the issue of mind control. Does this mean I'm under mind control? This was my question immediately. And if so, if I thought that was true, I think I might even consider killing myself. But personally, I do not believe that it is true, because I am working too hard on behalf of a level of freedom and independence based on knowledge about this for it to be any kind of bad mind control. So,
okay. Well, I hope that's right.
I hope I'm right. That's all I can say. I hope I'm right. Now, whether these implants involve mind control or if mind control could be involved in this, mind control is a matter of influencing the way a person thinks from the outside by introducing material that they believe to be their own thoughts. That's what mind control is.
That's right. So how would you know? How would you know, Whitley, if it was happening?
Well, I think you would know by what you did. And what I'm doing is trying to really empower the human species to perform our side of this relationship in a functional manner. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I don't think it's a bad thing to be doing.
No, I don't either. But the question is whether it's your original thought.
I don't think I can answer that. And if I said I could, maybe I would be under mind control.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hi, this is Dan from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Yes, Dan.
Yes. Question for Whitley here. I've got people like this in my own family that are good people, but they're relatively, I'll just say, backwards and ignorant. They don't know anything about the subjects you've been discussing tonight or about the condition of the world. And they make up a sizable percentage of the world population, and they have power. And in my opinion, they're not evil. They don't want to hold things back. They don't want to harm the world, but they do.
He makes a very, very good point, Whitley. There are just a lot of people out there who are just blind to all of this, including the environmental catastrophe that's hanging over our heads and getting closer every day, and the visitors and all the rest of it. They're not actively debunkers. They're not evil people.
No.
They just don't know.
The weight of that is what we have to bear. If those of us who are on the active side of this particular human triad, that those of us who are trying to do something are strong enough, we will succeed. And if we're not, their inertia will bring the whole species down. There's no question about that. That's really the crossroads we're at right now.
And you're more of an optimist than I am. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Hi. Are you talking to me?
I am.
Hi, Art. Hi, Whitley. This is Jody from Washington State. Yes, I want to talk about the blues. They're aliens. They're smaller than the grays.
Yes.
I've had experience with both of them. First, I'll just tell you about the grays. I think they're very invasive. My girlfriend, I was trying to help her, and the gray came right out from behind her, and my girlfriend was in a lot of pain, and it put a implant on her left ovary. It was a big substance. She went to the doctor and had it removed, and it was a big mass. And they didn't even know how to describe it. And there was another woman that I worked with, and it was terrifying. The gray came out of her, and it was a group of women with me, and they all saw it. And it kept saying to me, well, you must read your stuff in books. That's how you get your knowledge. And I was looking back at them, and I said, no, you don't have the right to be in her body. Get out. And I was really freaked out, but they're very invasive. They're not nice. Now, I was in Georgia when this happened, and I was living on a wildlife refuge. And now the blues, when they came, I was living on the wildlife refuge too, and they were smaller, but they were nice. And they kind of protected me, I would believe, from the grays, because I was pretty scared. And they came, and they're smaller, and they come like in a big white orb light, like a bright flashlight. And when they came at the edge of the bed, and they raised me up. And then they put these tablets of information, like little codes, almost like the computer-looking kind of alphabet, weird codes. And they put them into my solar plex. And ever since then, I'm able to, like, time travel to different dimensions. I'm able to photograph. I'm able to solve crimes. I mean, I'm very psychic. And so I truly trust the blues. The grays haven't bothered me or come near me or been around my friends or anything. And I'm not the only one that the grays were very invasive with. You know what I'm trying to say to you? I mean, I'm just not the only person.
Well, what she's talking about is something I hear a lot of this physical invasion business. And it is not something that has really happened to me. And this has always been outside of my body, but a lot of people report this, this sense of physical invasion. I, however, have seen the blues once or twice. The first time they were with the grays on my first close encounter experience, and they seemed to be working for them. I have numerous letters, not emails, but from before email, letters about the blues and about their presence, and they do seem to be a somewhat more benign presence than the grays, it's true. But at the same time, this business of them working together is repeated, too, from time to time. You do see that as well. So it's a very mixed bag. I thought that what the caller talked about was fascinating, and, you know, there's obviously so much about this experience we still have.
It is fascinating. All right, Whitley, hold tight. We're here at the bottom of the hour. But, you know, so many different perceptions, so many that have had this experience, but my God, so many different perceptions about what these creatures are, what these creatures want, what they did, whether it was religious or secular. I mean, just so completely different that if you didn't know better, it sounds crackpot-ish, doesn't it? I'm Art Bell. Hello, all. I use the term, it sounds kind of crackpot-ish, doesn't it? And I meant that in no derogatory sense at all. But if you listen to these people that have had these experiences, these experiencers, if you will, the people who have encountered the visitors, their perceptions are so different. Their faith is so different. The way they tell their stories is so different, and the way they perceive what happened to them is so different, that frankly, it does sound a little crazy when you listen to these various stories. It's hard to separate it, and it's damn easy to sit back and sort of listen to a program like this and go, well, what a bunch of crackpots. But this is something that's really happening. We are being visited, folks. And the fact that you're hearing different perceptions of those visitations doesn't mean it's crazy. It is happening. Whitley Strieber, who knows a lot about it, back in a moment. Once again, Whitley Strieber. Whitley, I hope you're following what I'm saying. Somebody tuning into the middle of this program, listening to these descriptions, I'm sure probably half of them are sitting back, and I know not all of them, because I'm getting a lot of very sincere responses here, but as people listen to these descriptions, because of all these different perceptions and faiths and ideas and way they greet the visitors and their understanding of what just happened to them, it just there's no thread, or there's very few threads, Whitley, that go through this that make sense to somebody listening to it.
What's happening is this: they are trying to describe in a language that was not designed to describe an experience that they have very little actual information about what it really is. The only thing you can say that's clear from what we're hearing is that people have had something surpassingly strange happen to them, so strange that maybe it is beyond the imagination of the average person to come up with a description like this. But whether or not what is being said and what really factually happened instant by instant are the same thing is a whole different kettle of fish. This is why, this is one of the core reasons that I wrote The Grays as fiction, so that I could help people who are having the experiences to explore what was for me a long, years-long process of clarifying my understanding of this in such a way that I could communicate meaningfully with the visitors a little bit. But, you know, we know there are other creatures on this planet, like dolphins, who have complicated languages. And we can teach dolphins to do things, but we can't understand a single word they say to each other. We're not even close.
That's right.
Undoubtedly, they're in the same position with us. And these visitors are even farther away. They're just light years away. But the struggle of the government agent in the book, Lauren Glass, to communicate with the captive gray, Adam, is my struggle to communicate with the grays as I lived it. And once we're better at communicating, these stories that you hear will seem equally strange to what you are hearing, but there will be a consistency to them. In the sense, right, not that everyone will be describing the same thing, but we'll all understand what the heck they mean when somebody says, well, a gray came out of so-and-so.
Right. Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning, Art and Whitley. This is Scott from Tampa.
Howdy.
Hi there.
Fascinating show. And I have to say, I think I'm bordering on a skeptic. Some nights I might not, but tonight perhaps I am. And the reason is that it doesn't seem that any of the encounters are at random. And I was wondering if Whitley had a point of view on whether or not encounters among the population are at random, or are they selected somehow?
They're not at random. I would not say that they were at random at all. I don't have that impression. And I have some rather surprising things to say about that. We made a list of all of the people who had written us letter mails, who had given us return addresses and names. It was quite a long list. And we had, I mean, not everyone who had written, but everyone who had written with describing an experience. And to our surprise, many, many of these names appeared to be Scots or Irish names, people from the Celtic countries, in other words. And, of course, the fairy lore, which is not, there's nothing to do with Tinkerbell, it's a lot more intense than that, comes from those countries as well. And if you read that lore, you find a lot in it, as Jacques Vallée, the great UFO researcher, did, that is similar to the modern close encounter experience. And you also find in the experience that it moves down generations. If one member of a family has it, almost or quite often, older members of that same family will have it too. And it, sometimes I've had once a family showed up with four generations in tow: a baby, the young mother, the grandmother, and the great-grandmother, all who had had close encounter experiences dating back to the 30s. So it follows families, and it seems to have a Celtic orientation. There are a certain number of American Indians in that as well. The other thing is this. When you get a group of these people together, and I've been in many groups of them, there's a mildness to them, almost as if they've been chosen because they're not aggressive people. They're very mild people. They don't raise their fists to anybody. And it's like they're looking for certain types of people, and there's definitely some kind of process going on with regard to choosing them. It's not random.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley. Hi.
Hi, this is James from Bremerton, Washington.
Yes, James.
And first, let me say that this is my first time calling in a radio station, so I'm pretty nervous.
Just relax and let it out.
I'll do my best. I had a couple of experiences in my past, and I'm not really entirely sure whether they are extraterrestrial in nature, but there are things that I've thought about many, many times throughout my life, and they've always left kind of a hole of wonderment. The first time was when I was, roughly 6, 7, or 8 years old or so. I was very young. And I was left alone. My mom went out to work, and she had called me that night to check up on me. And so I was walking down a hallway between my kitchen and living room. And we have our main door right there, and it has a window in it. And I was looking out the window, and I glanced what seemed to be, I'm not 100% sure what it was now, but it seemed to be a creature. And just for that moment, I was overwhelmed with such fear that I just ran around the corner still holding the phone, and I was hiding. And I told my mother about it. I haven't really talked to her much since, but I do recall catching a glimpse of the creature, and I was kind of hoping that Whitley might have seen this type of a creature. What I saw was, it seemed to be roughly maybe 5.5, 6 feet tall. It seemed to be wearing a shirt that seemed to be kind of a metallic blue color. It was seemed to be a very thin material. And what was really strange about it was it appeared to be bald, but it didn't seem to have a face. I'm not sure whether it was bald in the back of the head was facing towards me or not, but that's the impression that I got.
Now, why did you think this was a creature and not a human being? It's just simply standing facing away from you.
It was a strange, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It was just a strange feeling that I got. If it was a person, then I don't think I would have had quite the feeling of fear that I had felt.
Well, the answer to the first question is I've never seen personally anything like that. There are so many descriptions of different forms in the letters I've received, though, that there may be one or two with that form in it. It's not one I ever remember reading about either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always possible, you know. I mean, these things, you can see things that are, you know, you can have a brief hallucination or something can look like something that it actually isn't. And that may be all that it was. And they're also, in terms of the close encounter experience, there are hypnagogic and hypnopompic states, which where as you fall asleep, you may become paralyzed and you see a bizarre being or some equally strange hallucination, and people will sometimes weave that into a close encounter experience, or same thing can occasionally happen upon awakening. And those are commonplace, ordinary parts of life. They don't signify anything particularly serious. In general, I tend to kind of, in my own life, dismiss these things if they are not accompanied by some pretty definite physical evidence at the moment. In other words, if the creature had come into the house, then yeah, you could definitely say it was real. Or if you had seen a face, that it was not just a moment's hallucination or a little bit of a moment of sleep or something like that. But in this case, I think you just have to leave it in question.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see about getting myself hypnotically regressed back then to see if I can get a more clear picture.
That's a very good question. Whitley, how useful is hypnotic regression, in your opinion, for this sort of thing?
It depends on two things. First, if you don't have any real memories, then the chances of your weaving a memory out of your culture out of your knowledge and your expectations are very high, whether the hypnotist is leading or not. So that's real hard. When I went under hypnosis, by the time I was hypnotized, I had everything I ever talked about under hypnosis. I remembered pretty much of the close encounter experience. The initial hypnosis session was very surprising because it involved things that had happened the previous autumn in October that I had not consciously remembered. But then when we got to the things that I did consciously remember, the hypnosis didn't add anything to it except detail. And it was also performed by a leading forensic hypnotist, a real professional, a specialist in that very thing of extracting evidence using hypnosis, and who had successful case solution in his career. In other words, he'd helped people solve crimes doing this. So his techniques were effective in drawing not the expectations or desires of the subject, but the actual memories of mm-hmm. the subject, and that was proved in trial. So it's a very mixed bag. I would not necessarily try hypnosis under the circumstances that you describe. What I might try, though, is to let yourself to try to get into a relaxed situation and just see if you don't remember a little bit more. And don't push it at all, and maybe you will. If this is frightening and troubling to you and has left you, and it sort of sounds like this might be true in your voice, with a kind of an undercurrent of fear,
mm-hmm.
it might be good to go to a psychologist, and not for hypnosis at all, but just to talk about it. Just somebody who will listen to you, and it doesn't matter what they think happened or didn't happen to you. You can just talk about it. And as you talk about it, this may help you to get a little bit more closure on it.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
All right,
this
sir.
This is Dean, Mesa, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I was a security guard back when Mike Siegel was on the air. I told him this story a few years back. I was sitting in the truck. Security truck, and I was looking out over the gate area waiting for a delivery. And I guess I dozed off. I don't know. Next thing I know, I'm walking down this hallway of what I think was a spaceship. I could see the moon. We were like so close to the moon. And it was like a real thin window. and there was two of these aliens, I guess, were walking me down this hallway, and they sent me down in this, like, canvas chair, almost like a hammock type of chair. And I could see, like, a pinkish-orange background, and I could see these beings. They were, like, transparent. And they told me, and they said, well, it's time for you to go back to work. Somebody's waiting on you. And I woke up in front of the truck, and sure enough, the delivery truck was down there at the gates waiting for me. Have you ever heard of transparent beings at all?
Well, certainly translucent. If they were completely transparent, I don't think you'd have been able to see them.
Well,
you must have been able to see something.
And it was a very pleasant experience, by the way.
Okay, again, he made a very important point, caller. If they were translucent, you would not have seen a thing. So obviously they had some transparent, rather. So they had some form, right?
Yes. What I could really see was them. I could see their eyeballs and their mouth and their nose. That they look human. Other than the top of their head was bigger. But I could see the light behind them. This pinkish-orange fluorescent light, I guess you would, closest thing I could say it was. And it was just too real to be a dream.
Well, if we're dealing with a situation where there is something happening that's really complex and extremely strange that is trying to throw us off because it wants to remain in the world of dream and conjecture. The result is that people are coming back with stories like this that are very hard to understand. And yet, there is one part about this story that's extremely familiar to me, and that is the process of a person being out at night in a situation when they are alone and suddenly finding themselves in this state. Is it a state that he's in? I mean, did you fall asleep and then somehow go into a kind of a like a hypnagogic state, like we were just describing? Or were you really taken somewhere? We don't yet know the answer to that question. My guess is that many people who have these experiences are being taken somewhere. I think they probably are. And they're coming back with descriptions of what happened to them that are very hard to understand because our language was not built describe these experiences because they weren't part of our world, apparently, or at least they certainly weren't something that we were trying to talk about to each other.
It's almost like the varied aspects of the descriptions we're getting are almost, it's almost like they're meant to confuse, and they do a pretty good job of it, Whitley, but it's obvious.
Yes.
It's so obvious that this is real. This whole phenomena is absolutely real. It's really happening. But when you get these folks together and listen to story after story after story, it just kind of sounds crazy because it's all so different. Listen, buddy, we're out of time. It's been so great having you on the air. You don't need help with, you don't need help with the Graves. It's going to sell like crazy. And so your website, do you want to give that a quick plug?
Yeah, the website's unknowncountry.com. And go in the store, get the Graves, take a look at it. And tell your friends about it. There's no reason not to anymore. People accept this now. It's fine to tell them about it.
It's already happening. Buddy, thank you for being on the program, and good night.
Good night.
That's Whitley Strieber, folks. Very, very, very good friend of mine. And take it from me, in account after account after account, crazy as it may sound, this is real. It's really happening. Get the Grays. Read all about it. From Manila, I'm Art Bell. Good night.